Coming up next on Coffee Break, we're going to have the residents of Wrangell St. Elias National Park. We're going to continue the discussion of access issues for private landowners within parks. Good morning. It's time for a Tuesday edition of Coffee Break. It's October 21st. I'm Meg McKinney. All the media attention on McCarthy of late has obscured issues that have been brewing since the designation of Wrangell St. Elias National Park in 1980. Some residents of the park have formed a coalition to tackle the challenge of living on private lands surrounded by public. The issue of access is not unique to Wrangell St. Elias National Park. There are countless disputes that private landowners face within the National Park Service, both on states and up here in Alaska. Yesterday, I spoke with Jack McFarland and his family that has owned land within Glacier National Park for 70 years. The property was descended from a homestead claim, and when Glacier Park was designated, inholders were allowed access even when the public wasn't to the main and only road. A few years ago, Jack and his family decided to spend the winter on their property within Glacier National Park. Since no one in his family had spent a winter out there in over 20 years, Jack asked the Park Service whether he ought to plow the road or use a snow machine. He applied for a special use permit. The Park Service told him that he had to walk the 3 miles to the homestead. Jack and his family skied their supplies in that whole winter. And apparently, a 1976 statute that banned recreational use of snow machines in the park extended to limiting access for Jack McFarland and his family to non-motorized winter transport. Well, it simply wasn't doable to ski with children of ages 2, 4, and 6 and supplies in that winter of 1999. So that was the only one that the family spent out there in Glacier National Park. And their lawsuit has been in process since early 2000. In a nutshell, Jack told me that owning a piece of land has little value if you can't access it. Residents of McCarthy have also struggled with access issues, and we have an area-wide meeting coming up this Saturday to discuss these challenges. Rick Kenyon and Bonnie Kenyon and Susan Smith join me on the phone this morning. Good morning. How's the weather up there in McCarthy? And on that note, you have yet another caller before we run out of time. Good morning. You're on Coffee Break.
Hi, Meg. It's Jack McFarland. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I hope you heard it at the top of the hour.
I was able to hear it. I didn't realize when you called this number, it connects you immediately into your call. But I did want to just make a couple of points for people to understand. And I think in my situation, I've come to learn this a lot. And I think that for people who want to preserve their rights, what I've learned is that it doesn't matter what is in the law, like in ILCA and other legislative actions that have already been taken, people are seeing those tested. What matters is not what's in the law, but administratively how the park wants to change the interpretation. And I believe one of either the callers or one of the speakers earlier had mentioned that indeed policy changes, and it tends to change with superintendents and their interpretation of various things. So I think it's important, in my case, it's very similar, although maybe a century apart, but when Glacier Park was formed in 1910, there were homesteads, some still in the process of being patented, others that had been completed, and those inholders were very, very concerned about their ability to continue their lifestyle and to maintain the value of their property. And in being responsive to that, certain changes were made to the legislation that created the park that said, in part, that no purchases could be made by the park except on a willing buyer, willing seller basis. That was one of the key concessions. And the other was that the park could do nothing that would prohibit or prevent a resident or inholder from the full use and enjoyment of their land. And then over time, those restrictions have been tested, but I think the restrictions have accelerated, I would say, in the last decade to maybe two decades. And I think that people need to be aware that despite those laws, it's their usage patterns that they have to be careful of watching what the park does and calling them on it immediately. For example, in my lawsuit with the government over my access, you had mentioned in your call that the judge had decided that an interpretation of the snowmobiling, recreational snowmobiling in the park, should have put people on notice that the park intended to restrict landowners' access rights,
mm-hmm.
Of all kinds, of all types, and of all natures. And so I think that's a pretty tough standard when the average man is being asked to try to understand and interpret actions that don't, on their surface, appear to relate to them. So I would just urge your listeners who are concerned to be careful to not to let time pass by when something that appears to or even slightly appears to threaten them. I would suggest that they clarify it right away and keep written records of those communications and correspondence, because what tends to happen is, like the sign that was put up restricting, and one of the callers were saying was restricting their right to ride in certain areas, and later they changed that sign. The park has a short memory, and so they'll change it now, and then in some period in the future they'll change it back. And again, it's just simple reinterpretation of kind of what the law says. And in my case, I found out very clearly that even though I thought I was protected by laws, I have to pay a very heavy price to go try to enforce that protection in the courts. And the park counts on that, mm-hmm. in the sense that they, of course, have no end to lawyers, and any individual has to pay for their lawyers directly. So anyway, that's the general thing that I wanted to let people know to be careful of.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Jack, and I think that is a really poignant lesson about being mindful and watchful of what's going on within the park.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye. Well, that's great that Jack called in. Hey, before we run out of time, I just want to say thank you to all up there, the residents of the Wrangell-St. Elias National Park up there in McCarthy. And do you guys want to mention when and where your meeting's going to be, in case people didn't take note?
Yes, it will be Saturday, October 25th at 2 p.m. at the Caribou Banquet Room in Glenelg.
Fantastic.
And we certainly want to thank you, Meg, for squeezing us into your busy schedule, and I'd like to thank the Kenyans for allowing me to come out here and work with you here.
Well, we thank you so much too, Mega. You really prepared well for this interview, and we really appreciate you making this information available to the public. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and keep me posted on how your meeting goes. I wish you well.
Thank you.
Thank you. You've been listening to a Tuesday edition of Coffee Break.